This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Welcome to Diabetic News, where volunteers read the latest tips and information about diabetes, from new drugs to new recipes, from medical experts to stories by people who live with it every day with hope, right here on your audio reading service.
Welcome, this is Diabetic News, and I'm your reader Hadley with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Diabetes Self-Management and Eating Well. And now I'll begin with DiabetesSelfManagement.com, copyright 2025, BGFG. Insulin Resistance, Three Associated Medical Conditions, by Giles Bowdwin, CSEP, CEP, MSC. Insulin resistance is a condition characterized by the body's cells becoming unresponsive to the effect of insulin, a hormone that helps move glucose from the blood into the cells for energy. This can lead to high blood glucose, known as hyperglycemia, and typically results in higher insulin secretion by the pancreas and higher than normal levels of insulin in the blood. You may already know that insulin resistance is a hallmark of prediabetes, a condition in which blood glucose levels are high, but not high enough to be considered diabetes. It is estimated that more than 96 million American adults, 1 in 3, have this condition, and more than 80% of them don't know they have it. It is generally associated with a number of factors, including a lack of physical activity, an unhealthy diet, smoking, overweight or obesity, with excess fat around the abdomen, and a family history of type 2 or gestational diabetes. If it progresses, prediabetes can develop into type 2 diabetes. But did you know that insulin resistance is a factor in a number of health challenges besides just prediabetes and type 2 diabetes? In this article, you will learn how insulin resistance can influence certain additional conditions and discover that there are extra benefits to managing your blood glucose just beyond diabetes. Let's make one thing clear before we start. The objective is not zero insulin. Insulin is a vital hormone, and your body cannot function without it. We mainly know it for its primary role of facilitating the entry of glucose into cells. But insulin is a multitasker, and at the right level, it is very beneficial. But just like a lot of good things, too much of it can be a bad thing. So without further ado, let's look at the first condition associated with insulin resistance. Alzheimer's. Dementia is a general term that describes a decline in memory and other cognitive skills. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia. According to the Alzheimer's Association, more than 6 million Americans live with Alzheimer's disease. The condition has many risk factors, including advancing age and genetics. But as of today, there's not much that can be done about those. So let's focus on what appears to be a modifiable risk factor for this condition. According to some researchers, reducing insulin resistance may decrease the risk of susceptibility to Alzheimer's. There is such a strong link between the two conditions, in fact, that Alzheimer's is sometimes called type 3 diabetes. What is insulin's role here? After the hormone has done its job, it needs to be taken out of the bloodstream. Otherwise, your blood sugar plummets and you develop low blood sugar, hypoglycemia. Removing the insulin from the bloodstream is the responsibility of an aptly named enzyme, insulin-degrading enzyme, IDE. IDE is a multitasking enzyme. It also helps dissolve amyloid plaque, gooey clumps of protein that can accumulate in the brain and have been linked to Alzheimer's. One possible simplified explanation. If IDE is constantly busy with insulin, it cannot do a good job of removing the amyloid plaque, and it is allowed to build up in the brain. Insulin resistance also deprives the brain's cells of the fuel they need to function properly. Additionally, over time, the increased blood glucose levels caused by insulin resistance can damage blood vessels, including those in the brain. While the right level of insulin has a positive effect on the brain, research suggests that insulin resistance may damage the cognitive system and lead to dementia states. Researchers followed a group of 3,695 patients ages 30 to 86 for 11 years. They found that HbA1c, also known as A1c, a measure of long-term glucose control, levels were linked with cognitive performance. Higher A1c results equaled lower cognitive performance. Lifestyle modifications may have an impact. A number of researchers suggest that intermittent fasting by, for example, limiting calorie intake to a 12-hour period during the day, with the approval of your doctor, is a way to improve insulin sensitivity and may help with slowing cognitive decline. Although studies into this approach are preliminary, there is evidence that certain types of intermittent fasting can help delay the onset and progression in models of Alzheimer's in animals. This was our first example. Next, we'll look at another common condition that can be associated with insulin resistance. Some of the many functions of insulin: regulating blood glucose by facilitating the movement of glucose from the bloodstream into the cells, modifying the activity of enzyme, proteins that help speed up metabolism, managing the creation of lipids by uptake into fat cells, managing breakdown of protein and lipids, allowing for the uptake of amino acids, the building blocks of proteins, and potassium into the cells, building muscle following sickness or injury by facilitating the uptake of amino acids, managing the excretion of sodium and fluid volume in the urine, improving the memory and learning capabilities of the brain. High blood pressure. High blood pressure is a combination of heart rate, how much blood the heart pumps out, and the resistance in the arteries. If one of these factors increases and the other ones are stable, blood pressure will go up. It is normal for blood pressure to go up and down during the day, but it becomes problematic when it stays up. High blood pressure, hypertension, is defined as a systolic blood pressure, top number, over 130, or a diastolic blood pressure, bottom number, greater than 80. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, nearly half of adults in the United States live with hypertension. And sadly, only 24% of them have the condition under control. There are two main types of hypertension, primary and secondary. Primary, also called essential, high blood pressure represents roughly 90 to 95% of the cases. And in these cases, the cause is unknown. Secondary high blood pressure is caused by a known medical condition. So how does insulin resistance fit in this picture? It has to do with insulin's effect at the kidney level. One of the ways that high insulin levels, characteristic of insulin resistance, raise blood pressure is by decreasing sodium excretion by the kidneys. This retained sodium and the water it pulls into the bloodstream puts more pressure on blood vessels, thus increasing the resistance from the blood vessels. In this case, a doctor may prescribe a diuretic in order to flush out the excess water. On a separate front, insulin resistance is linked with a loss of magnesium, a mineral that helps blood vessels relax in the urine. When magnesium is low, blood vessels cannot relax as well, and the ensuing constriction can chronically raise blood pressure. Some research has concluded that magnesium supplementation can help lower blood pressure in people with insulin resistance. Now, you are getting to know some new angles to insulin resistance. We've covered two situations where chronic high levels of insulin in the blood can cause health problems. Now we move on to our third example, and this one is a double whammy. It combines effects of high insulin levels and high blood glucose levels. Cancer. We all have defective cells in our bodies. They develop for a variety of reasons, such as unhealthy diet, exposure to toxins, chemical substances, chronic stress, and so forth. Under normal conditions, your body can manage those cells and keep them in check. But left unchecked, they can grow uncontrollably, a condition known as cancer. In 2020, the five most common cancers in the United States were breast, prostate, lung, colorectal, and melanoma. It is estimated that close to 40% of the population will get a cancer diagnosis at some point. Let's first look at hyperinsulinemia. Insulin is considered an anabolic agent, or a substance that stimulates the growth or creation of body tissues. In studies, hyperinsulinemia has been associated with cancer mortality independently of diabetes, obesity, and metabolic syndrome. In some research, people with hyperinsulinemia have also been found to have an increased risk of breast, colorectal, prostate, pancreatic, endometrial, liver, and ovarian cancers. Now on to the hyperglycemia aspect. Glucose is the preferred energy source for cancer cells. Studies have shown that hyperglycemia raises the prevalence of and mortality from certain cancers such as breast, liver, bladder, pancreatic, colorectal, and endometrial cancers. Resist insulin resistance. So, now you know a bit more about insulin resistance and the importance of managing your blood glucose. The explanations of these processes were simplistic. Metabolic diseases are complex, with many causes, and they take years to develop. But the takeaway is this. When you get a warning sign, take it seriously. Make the necessary adjustments. It's never too early to prevent a disease from developing. Educate yourself and take action. Bear in mind that we all have different lives and physiology. So what works for one person may not work for another. But give your body what it needs, and it will adjust the course. Learn about lifestyle hacks for managing blood sugar. Have a conversation with your doctor about your objectives and what changes you are making to improve your health and avoid insulin resistance. A safe and gradual approach is best. What calcium does for your body? And How to Get Enough, by Amy Campbell, MS, RD, LDN, CD, CES. Key points. Calcium is essential for strong bones and teeth, and also supports muscles, nerves, and heart health. You can get calcium from foods like dairy, leafy greens, fortified drinks, tofu, and canned fish with bones. Your body absorbs calcium best in smaller doses, 500 milligrams or less, and when taken with food. Calcium supplements may help some people, but can have risks. Talk to your doctor before starting one. A diet too low in calcium may raise your risk for osteoporosis and kidney stones. Too much calcium, especially from supplements, can lead to side effects like constipation or even heart issues. Vitamins and minerals are essential for overall health. While vitamins are organic compounds, minerals are inorganic elements that our bodies need to function properly. They help keep your bones, muscles, heart, and brain working the way they should. They play key roles in making hormones and enzymes, too. There are two categories of minerals, according to Medline Plus. Macro minerals, which your body needs in larger amounts, include calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, sodium, potassium, chloride, and sulfur. Trace minerals needed in smaller amounts include iron, manganese, copper, iodine, zinc, cobalt, fluoride, and selenium. Let's start with the first mineral on the list, calcium. What calcium does for the body? Most people think of strong bones when they hear the word calcium, and for good reason. Calcium is essential for building and maintaining healthy bones and teeth. But its role in the body goes far beyond your skeleton. Calcium helps your muscles contract, assists with blood clotting, keeps your heart rhythm steady, allows nerves to send and receive signals, and plays a part in releasing hormones and other important chemicals. It is the most abundant mineral in the body, and about 98% of it is stored in your bones and teeth, which is part of what makes them so strong. But calcium also circulates in your bloodstream, where it performs many of its other essential functions. Because your body needs a steady supply of calcium in the blood, it has a clever system for managing levels. If calcium levels drop too low, a hormone called parathyroid hormone, PTH, signals your bones to release calcium into the blood. It also tells your kidneys to hold on to more calcium instead of passing it into the urine. When there's enough calcium in your blood, another hormone, calcitonin, steps in. It does the opposite. It slows the release of calcium from your bones and encourages your kidneys to excrete more calcium in the urine. Calcium and bone health. Bone is living tissue. It's constantly being built up and broken down in a process called remodeling. Specialized bone cells handle this job. Osteoblasts build new bone. Osteoclasts break down old bone. After about age 30, bones begin to gradually lose calcium, and bone loss tends to speed up during middle age. This natural process can lead to osteoporosis, a condition that causes bones to become weak and fragile, and raises the risk of fractures. According to the Office of Dietary Supplements, ODS, at the National Institutes of Health, bone loss can affect both women and men. A bone mineral density test can help assess how strong your bones are and whether you're at risk for osteoporosis. It might seem like taking calcium supplements would help prevent weak bones, but the research here isn't entirely consistent. While some studies don't show a clear benefit in preventing bone fractures across the general population, there is evidence that calcium supplements may help frail older adults, especially when paired with vitamin D. Calcium and heart health. There's some evidence that taking calcium supplements, as opposed to getting calcium from food, may increase the risk of heart disease in both men and women. One possible reason, hypercalcemia, or too much calcium in the blood, which could contribute to blood clots or hardening of the arteries. It's important to note that research is not conclusive, and more studies are needed to fully understand the link between calcium supplements and heart health. For now, experts generally recommend aiming to get most of your calcium from food and using supplements only when needed. Can calcium help prevent colorectal cancer? Studies have shown that increasing calcium intake by about 300 milligrams per day, roughly the amount in one large glass of milk, is associated with up to 17% lower risk of colorectal cancer. One possible explanation is that calcium may bind to harmful substances such as bile acids in the colon, preventing them from damaging the cells that line the intestinal wall. Some researchers also think that beneficial bacteria in dairy foods might play a role protecting against the development of cancer cells. While more research is needed, this potential benefit is one more reason to aim for enough calcium in your diet. Calcium and kidney stones. What to know? When it comes to kidney stones, calcium is not the enemy. In fact, it may be part of the solution. According to the National Kidney Foundation, a low calcium diet can actually increase the risk of developing calcium oxalate kidney stones. In a study of more than 45,000 men, those who drank 2 or more 8-ounce glasses of skim milk per day had a 42% lower risk of kidney stones compared with men who drank less than 1 glass per month. Similarly, Eating cottage cheese or ricotta cheese once a week was linked to a reduced risk. Why? It's believed that calcium from foods binds to oxalates in the digestive tract. This reduces oxalate absorption and makes it less likely that calcium oxalate stones will form. Experts recommend consuming calcium-rich foods at the same time as oxalate-containing foods like spinach, beets, or nuts to lower your stone risk. In addition to protecting against kidney stones, calcium may also prevent preeclampsia, a serious complication that can occur in late pregnancy, metabolic syndrome in women, though the benefit hasn't been clearly shown in men. Calcium-rich foods and supplement options. Calcium is found in a variety of foods, and not just dairy. Here are some top sources. Milk and fortified plant-based milks like soy, almond, or oat milk. Yogurt. Cheese. Fortified fruit juices. Tofu processed with calcium. Canned sardines and salmon with bones. Vegetables such as kale, broccoli, Chinese cabbage, and collard greens. Nuts and seeds, including almonds, Brazil nuts, and sunflower seeds. Dried beans. Blackstrap molasses. Fortified cereals and breads. Calcium is also available in supplement form, including multivitamin / mineral combos, calcium with vitamin D, or supplements with just calcium alone. The two main types of calcium supplements are calcium carbonate, which is best absorbed when taken with food and also found in some antacids. Calcium citrate, which can be taken with or without food and may be better for people with reduced stomach acid. Recommended daily calcium intake. Your calcium needs vary depending on your age, sex, and life stage. Here are the current recommended dietary allowances for adults. Men 19 to 70 years old, 1,000 milligrams per day. Men 71 and older, 1,200 milligrams per day. Women 19 to 50 years, 1,000 milligrams per day. Women 51 and older, 1,200 milligrams per day. Pregnant and lactating women, ages 19 to 50, 1,000 milligrams per day. Symptoms. These recommendations reflect the amount needed to maintain bone health and support other important bodily functions. Most people can meet their needs through food, but some may need supplements if their intake falls short. Symptoms of calcium deficiency. When your body doesn't get enough calcium over time, it can lead to serious health problems. These include osteoporosis, a condition that causes bones to become weak and fragile, increasing the risk of fractures. Rickets, soft, weak bones in children, often due to both calcium and vitamin D deficiency. Osteomalacia, soft bones in adults and sometimes children, typically caused by a lack of calcium or vitamin D. There's also a condition called hypocalcemia, which means the level of calcium in your blood is too low. This can result from having your thyroid gland removed, disorders of parathyroid hormone, or vitamin D, kidney disease, or certain medications. Symptoms of hypocalcemia can include muscle cramps or spasms, tingling in the lips, fingers, and feet, stiff, achy muscles, confusion or difficulty thinking clearly, depression or mood changes, forgetfulness. Some groups are more likely to have calcium deficiency, including postmenopausal women, people who avoid dairy foods, people with low vitamin D levels, or limited sun exposure. Symptoms of too much calcium, toxicity. While calcium is essential for health, too much can be harmful, especially when taken in large amounts. Hypercalcemia, too much calcium in the blood. Hypercalcertia, too much calcium in the urine. These conditions are rare in healthy people, but individuals with cancer or primary hypoparathyroidism are at higher risk. Symptoms of calcium overload can include weakness and fatigue, poor muscle tone, bone pain, chest pain or palpitations, stomach upset, nausea and vomiting, constipation, kidney problems such as kidney stones or impaired function. To help prevent toxicity, the tolerable upper intake level for calcium is 2,500 milligrams per day for adults ages 19 to 50, 2,000 milligrams per day for adults over 50. These limits apply to total calcium you get from both food and supplements. Final thoughts on calcium in your health. Calcium plays a vital role in your overall health, from building strong bones to supporting your health, muscles, and nerves. While it's best to get calcium from food, supplements can help fill the gap if needed. Just be sure to talk with your healthcare provider before starting a supplement, especially if you take other medications. With the right approach, you can give your body the calcium it needs to stay strong and healthy. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Hadley with Diabetic News. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library.